You're about to hear an inspiring message from the team at C3 Church Bathurst. It's our prayer that it will spur you to live your best life in Him.
This morning we're going to preach from Abraham, way back in Genesis, the first book of the Bible. If you can't find Genesis, we're all in trouble. So come with me to Genesis 22, verse 1, right at the beginning. We're in the middle of a series called Sacrificial Life, that life comes from sacrifice. And life is good, like good life. It's not weird life or downcast life or heavy life, you know. You walk around like this, how are you going? I'm okay, I'm having a tough week. And sometimes we do have tough weeks. But in the middle of trial, in the middle of circumstance, guess what? We can have life. And life in all of its fullness, because that's the promise of Jesus. So regardless of what's going on and you know, things happen in our world that cause hardship and difficulty, absolutely. But Jesus is in the middle of that with us, giving us the life that we need to get through sometimes. And I've been thinking about sacrifices, and there's such blessing in sacrifice, which is why I'm talking about the sacrificial life and the blessing of sacrifices. And often you don't think that those two things can go together. Sacrifice, isn't that doing without things? Isn't that putting things on side? And how can that be a life of blessing? Well, I've been thinking about the World Cup soccer. Anyone watch that last night? Yes, I did too. Forever optimistic that just maybe it's possible. Don't shake your head at me and Mary. I'm an Aussie, an optimistic Aussie. I was there in 1983. Watching television. Who wasn't born then? I was a kid. I was, How old was I? 82. I was 11. I was 11 years old. America's Cup. Anyway, the story goes. In 1983, after 132 years of American dominance, Australia won this thing, America's Cup. What was miraculous about it? Winged keel, you know, ever seen that? Bob Lexon. Anyway, what was incredible about that was it came down to the fourth leg. The Australian boat was just so far behind, it was ridiculous. Then the whole country watched as this boat just goes, some kind of turbocharge on it, and then it overtook the American boat and everybody won. And then our Prime Minister got on stage and says, if anybody sacks anyone for not being at work today, he's a bum. Our Prime Minister said that, Mr. Hawke. He probably had a few when he said that. I'm going to preach. But, you know, that sense of Aussie spirit, we can do it, overcome the odds, you know. Anyway, that's my thing of the World Cup. But I was thinking about the sacrifice that people have made to get to the World Cup, like to play in the World Cup. A young man called Josh Risden, who was there last night, if he stuck out his foot, apparently, this is all over the press this morning, if he stuck out his foot just another 10 centimetres, he could have stopped the goal that caused Australia to lose. So he's now a national villain. But you know, I was reading about this young man. As a kid, he'd from Bunbury, WA, down the south coast, he'd drive up four times a week. His parents would take him up to play soccer. And then he moved on his own to Perth when he was 14 years old. And he got married just recently. And he was only allowed one day to get married from his training regime before going back to Turkey. So he got married, and then the next day he's on a plane back to Turkey to train with the boys for the team. Said goodbye to his wife, his new wife. That's sacrifice, isn't it? Like nothing good in life comes without sacrifice, without putting aside things. And his wife was very gracious and wrote that it's been a long-term goal for him. And he works hard every day, eating, training. It's a 24-hour job. And it got me thinking about our world, how we applaud people and we look at stuff on the outside, like someone who's playing for the Socceroos. But we don't see the sacrifice that's got us to that point. And anybody who's, you know, started businesses or, you know, raised a family or done a university degree or finished school or, you know that there is sacrifice required. Well, let's look at the sacrifice of the story of Abram and Isaac. And it says in Genesis 22, It says, now it came about after these things. So when you ever see that in the Bible, you've got to look at what are these things that came before. And what happened then was that Abraham actually received the promised child, a little boy called Isaac, after years and years of waiting. He was 90. He was old, way past childbearing. His wife, Sarah, was old, impossible to have a child. But they held on and they believed God that this child would bear the promise of God and that through this child that all the nations of the earth would come to know God. That was the promise. And they had this little boy came, little boy Isaac, and grew up to be about 10, 14, not too sure, but something like that, commentators say. And then something strange happened. It says, after these things that Isaac was born, that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abram. And he said, here I am. I don't know where else he'd be, but here. He said, take now your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah. And offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I tell you. This is a little weird, isn't it? Different culture, different times, and what is that about? This is a little strange, God. And I can imagine, as Abram, I can imagine this child of promise, this child that they've waited for so long. Now God says, that boy, take him and kill him. What would my response be? I'd be pleading with God. I go, God, what? No, you can't. Me? No, him? No. Let's talk about this. It's got to be, let's have a good chat, God. But do you know what Abraham doesn't do? He's all of that. And what he does do is right in the next verse. It says, so Abraham rose early in the morning. That's an incredible verse in the Bible right there. God says, go and do this. And Abraham, yes, sir. So early in the morning, like he didn't even wait. He didn't even wait to sleep in and go, oh, maybe God's changed his mind. No, he made a resolve. I am going to follow whatever God has told me to do. So he rose early in the morning, trusted God. He saddled his donkey, took two of his young men with him and Isaac, his son. He split wood for the burnt offering early in the morning. He's out there cutting wood in the snow. And carrying fire, like there's no matches. You got to carry a flame of some sort on the donkey. Wood. He arose and went to the place of which God had told him. And on the third day, things happen on the third day in the scriptures. On the third day, Abram raised his eyes and saw the place from a distance. And Abram said to his young men, stay here. Stay here with the donkey. And I and the lad will go over there and we will worship and return to you. Abram took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac, his son. He carried the wood. And he took in his hand the fire and the knife. And so the two of them walked on together. Isaac spoke to Abram, his father, and said, my father. And he said, here I am, my son. And he said, behold. He said, see the fire? And the wood, it's all there, but where's the lamb? You know, don't we need something to sacrifice on an altar? Dad, you're missing something here. God told him. They came to the place, and Abram built the altar. They arranged the wood and bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar. Top of the wood. One of the most heart-wrenching scenes in the Bible of a father laying his son on top of an altar. Got to be questioning, surely. What am I doing? Isn't this the child promised me? Isn't this the future of the world? Doesn't this child carry everything? I'm just going to trust God. Gets out his knife. And he stretched out his hand. The angel of the Lord called from heaven and said, Abram, Abram. He He said, here I am. Again. He said, do not stretch out your hand against the lad and do nothing to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son from me. He says, don't do it. Don't touch it. I didn't want to kill the boy. I just wanted to know what's in your heart, Abram. I just wanted to know how far this child had gone into your heart. The child is actually mine, says God. I want to know how far I can trust you. I want to take you to the edge and see if you still trust me. Brutal test from God, really. And then Abram raised his eyes and looked, and behold, behind a ram caught in a thicket. And Abram went and took the ram and offered him for a burnt offering in the place of his son. And Abram called the name of that place, the Lord will provide. As it is said to this day, on the mount of the Lord, it will be provided. That ram, that sheep, then became a sacrificial offering for that. And it makes me think. Because that sounds awfully like another story in the Bible, doesn't it? It sounds very much like the account of Jesus 2,000 years later on in Bible history. That here in the Old Testament, way before Jesus came and was written about, here is a story that explains Jesus. Isn't that amazing? The Bible is incredible. It is one book, just one book. But it contains over thousands of years of history, the same story, and it all points to Jesus. It all points to this sacrifice. And can you see it? And if you read this story with new eyes, you look at this story, and we have a God with one son who takes that son and takes him. And even the son carries this wood up the mountain, carries a cross up the mountain to a place of sacrifice, except this time. Father goes through with it. Except this time, the father actually sees his son die in the hope of resurrection. But Abram is getting a sense and a foretaste of what God is going to feel later on with his son. And in that same place, we see that God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering. And in that sacrifice, God takes our sin, our shame, completely destroys it. Nails it to a cross. But that's not the end of the story. Because after that, a second time God calls down from heaven to Abram. Another time he says, Abram, guess what Abram says? Here I am. He doesn't actually. Anyway, he probably would have. I mean, maybe God couldn't find him. That's why God, Abram has to stay. Here I am. Over here. Just kidding. He says, because you've done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son, indeed I will greatly bless you and I'll greatly multiply your seed as the stars of the heavens and as the sand which is on the seashore, and your seed shall possess the gate of your enemies, and in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed because you have obeyed my voice. Right there, in that step of obedience, in that step of loyalty, God says, because you've done that, watch what I'm going to do. And he reiterates the promise that he gave in Genesis 12. You keep seeing the same promise. The promise, the blessing of Abraham is multiplication, descendants, many as the stars, and possession, that you will own and you will possess your own land. Remember, Abraham is just a wandering wanderer. Nomad, I think that's the word I'm after. He doesn't own anything. He's got a few sheep. But God keeps saying to him, you're going to possess this land. You're going to own this land. And I will multiply your descendants. And it's going to happen through your son, Isaac. And all, the last bit of the promise is that all of the nations of the world will come to know Jesus because of you. Three things that actually take place. And you see it in Bible history. The book of Hebrews records this, and if you fast forward a few thousand years to the Bible times, the writer of the Hebrews writes an account of this story in the what we might call the Hall of Fame of Bible characters. Hebrews 11 is a great Hall of Fame, if you like, of all of the key Bible characters in the Old Testament. It's a great read if you're ever feeling depressed. And you want to lift yourself up, you have a read of all the things that people did by faith. It goes this by faith, so-and-so, by faith. And then it gets to Abram in verse 17 of Hebrews 11. It says, by faith, Abram, when tested, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. And I read that, I think, did he? He offered him, but he didn't go through with it. He who embraced the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, it's through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. Abram reasoned that God could even raise the dead. And so in a manner of speaking, he did receive Isaac back from the dead. This is the Hebrews writer interpretation. Thousands of years later, picture him reading the book of Genesis, and he's looking at that and going, what was he thinking? How come he went through with that? And I'm thinking that he was thinking that Abraham was able to think that God would raise Isaac from the dead, but therefore go through with it. So by faith, he's got a greater expansive picture of the power of God. So why would someone go to these extremes of sacrifice? Why would Abraham do this? Why would he go all that way, risk so much that he's waited for and hoped for? And I don't think I would. Why? Well, here it is. It's because Jesus did it. He was serving a God who he knew could go all the way. He was serving a God who was able and capable and willing to do exactly what he'd asked Abraham to do. We serve a God who doesn't just talk about sacrifice, but has done sacrifice. We don't serve a God who's asking his people to do more than he's done. In fact, it's the opposite. God has paved the way with his sacrifice, and then he invites us into that journey. Why? Because we receive the same blessing in sacrifice. Look at this verse in Philippians 2. Paul writes to the Philippian church after Jesus has died, and he says, have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, although he existed in the form of God, did not regard equality with God as a thing to be grasped. It means, although he was God, he didn't consider, you know, his Godhead as that important in his own mission. He didn't kind of hang on to his divinity. He said he emptied himself. He took his robes off, his God robe clothes off. He emptied himself of his Godhead and was made in the likeness of men, taking the form of a bondservant. He humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death of the cross. Took on skin, bone, human limitation, human weakness, and all the things that the humanity of us, why would God clothe himself in skin and weakness and failure, and all the things that we have to carry around? Wouldn't you rather be God? But that's the ultimate sacrifice, isn't it? That Jesus would leave that behind in heaven and come and walk our streets and come and live amongst us and come and understand human limitation and human weakness and identify with every problem and every pressure that we ever have. That's our God. And look what happened. For this reason also, God highly exalted him and bestowed on him a name which is above every name. He lifts him up. Jesus has finished his work. God gets come up, sit at my right hand, rule in heaven. Can you see the pattern? Godly sacrifice coming through the other side leads to life. It leads to victory. It leads to blessing. The blessing of sacrifice is what's on the other side. So many of us don't pay the price of sacrifice because we're afraid of letting go, but we don't see the blessing on the other side. If only we would let go of those things. If only we could surrender those things like Abram and go all the way and to a point where God says no and then completely fulfill his promises. Sometimes I think that our inability to go through sacrifice stops us from reaching our promised land. If only we would be prepared to do that. I think that sacrifice is one of the keys to Christian growth in life. I think it's what separates the sheep from the goats, if you like. I think it's the thing that stops people from progressing in the Christian walk. It's easy to talk about God. It's easy to read the Bible. It's easy to pray. But when the rubber hits the road, it's usually around heart and a test of sacrifice and a test of obedience. And it's not always a message we want to hear. I'm telling you, the fruit and the blessing of sacrifice on the other side is so worth it. Early on in my Christian walk, I grew up in a Christian church and home, and I was a good kid and all that, really. I used to play the piano in the church, 5 o'clock service. And, you know, as a kid, I've been doing this for a long time. I think it's time to retire. But I love it. And so I was very blessed with an upbringing surrounded by, you know, Christians. But I never actually knew Jesus through it all. I just actually thought I didn't really need him because I was good enough. Ever been there? It's not like I didn't really understand, but I didn't really understand. I didn't get it that I had to give my life for Christ. That I didn't have to personally reach a point where I surrender and sacrifice my agenda, my dreams, my plans to him. That's the point of salvation. And there was a time in Canberra when I was studying, I think it was third year university, I was about 22, and I had this encounter with God where he came to me and he said, are you willing to let go of everything in your life? Are you willing to take a step and to completely let go of your agenda, of your plans, of your dreams? And when the Holy Spirit comes into your room, and you kind of have no choice, he tricks you. He doesn't really. But in that moment, you go, of course, God. Of course. Like, man, I just want to follow you. It's that kind of response, isn't it? And so many of you have that same experience. Like, of course. Like, I don't really care about my life. What I care about is you. And I trust you with my life. When you reach that point, that's the ultimate sacrifice. And what God started to do was to undo things in my world. So early on in my Christian life, and I've got diaries. I used to write so much on what God was showing me in my early 20s. And I've got all these diaries and the things that God was putting his finger on. And you need to let go of that. And now it's this one. It's like, so for example, my family really mattered to me. I had a very close family and still do. It's good. But God was saying, you've got to let go of their expectations on your life. You've got to stop worrying about what they think about you and be prepared to walk a life that may be different than what they would think. That's a tough one, isn't it? I said, yes. So once I said yes then, and it was easy to kind of follow the path that God had for me, even if my parents are going, you know, what's happening there? Like my financial world. Are you willing to let go of the dreams, finances? Of course. Are you willing to let go of the things that are in me? One of the things that was tough was that I met this young girl at uni. The first night of university, there she is. And I have permission to tell a story from Ro, who's not here. Not deliberately. And we got to know each other pretty well. Hung out a lot, you know. It was my car, but she liked it more than I did. So we just hung out a lot. We had a really good relationship, good friendship, you know. Went out together. And but this was before we knew Jesus. And during this process of learning about Jesus, I was really aware that I needed to let go of a deep relationship in order to sort this relationship out first. Because I knew that if I didn't have a really firm foundation in Christ, that sideways is never really going to work. So, and I, there was a moment where God had put his finger on this and he said, you need to let go of your relationship with Rome and put it down so much so that it may never be picked up again. Kill it off. That's it. Now, it's easy to look back now, but that was a really tough decision. And I remember we had lots of letters. We'd write profuse amounts of letters back in letter writing times. Yeah, who wrote letters? Yeah, like a romantic couple. We would write lots of letters. I remember working in different places and the holidays, and we'd write to each other, old school, and I had this pile of letters. And there was one night where I was praying with this and really sensed that God said, grab all those letters and go and burn them. Say goodbye to that relationship. Now, this wasn't a bad relationship. This was a good relationship. But it was getting in the way between me and God at a foundational time in my Christian walk. So I did. I was living near some bushland in Canberra and I got these letters and I bundled it up in the sticks and took the matches and got it to a mountain. I literally did this. And I set fire to these letters. So I don't have any romantic love letters from my courtship. But do you know what? In that moment, and it wasn't easy to communicate that to Ro. It was on a journey yourself. But in that moment, something just completely lifted. And it's like God says, all right, now I understand. And I really did let that go. But 3 years later, this happened. This next thing, which made it all worth it. And that's me, by the way. Andro. One of the greatest days of my life. And there was a time when I was in prayer and felt like God said, it's time to get married. I said, all right, who to? It was, we hadn't spoken for about a year. I said, all right, we'll go and find her. So found her, took her out, had dinner and said, look, why don't we get married? 4 months later, we got married. Why? Why muck around? And, we've just got such a good relationship, such a good marriage. Nothing's perfect. Because I'd let that thing go, what God gave back was so rich. And it's so true in everything that God puts his finger on. Whether it's big things like that, and these are big things when you're early 20s, everything. Or whether it's just little things. And I often think it's in the little moments the sacrifice is hard. It's like forgive that person. Stop holding that grudge. No. We hold on to things, don't we? Like they're not even the grand things. They're the little details of life. And it's when you learn to obey God in the little things that makes the big things really easy. So that's why I love tithes and offerings. Brilliant. I love that thing of the boy who's, I'd never thought of that. Like surely somebody else had lunch as well. But that little boy said, okay. That's why the weekly offerings is so important because it's just a weekly reminder that this substance is not actually mine. It belongs to God. We're just stewards. Relationships, careers, expectations, future, possessions. Long ago, we laid down the dream of owning our house, Ro and I. We went to Thailand. All of our friends were buying houses in Sydney when we could. Came back and the housing market has gone through the roof. Well, that was the price that we paid to follow God in missions. Somehow God gave us this most amazing house now. Sacrifice is always worth it. Laying it down with the chance that it may never come back. These promises in Scripture are things to hold on to. My encouragement this morning, if you've laid things down for the sake of the gospel, they're not dead. Just in the ground. Waiting for a season to be revived. It might take months, years, decades. If you've laid things down for the sake of the gospel, there's great hope there. There's great life. Don't ever let go of that. And remind God. You say, God, God highly exalted Jesus who laid down his life.
Thanks for listening. We would love to connect with you. Our services are on Sundays at 217 Howick Street at 10 a.m. for a 10:30 service. Or visit us on the web at c3churchbathurst.org. Come like a river, come like a flood. Let us be overwhelmed, baptized in your love.